The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Greetings, nerds. This is Sina Nerd. I'm your host, Sarah Belmont, and with me as always is our Mr. Producer, Will Paul. How are you doing tonight, Will?
Doing very well, Sarah. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, I missed you. I know it was just only a week, but it seems that no one ever... It's like part of our my weekly routine to like sit down and have the fireside chat with you, so.
Yeah, except like fires are just all over Juneau right now, so you can be anywhere in the state and you're sitting next to a fire, it feels like.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
A lot of smoke. No, I mean, I needed a break and I'm glad I had it, and I really did try to just drop off the side of the earth as much as I could.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you need to do that. It's just good to drop off the grid and just, you know, recharge the batteries and stuff, because, yeah, we just need that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Peter Parker could not do that in the new movie that dropped over the 4th of July weekend, Far From Home.
No, he could not. And, you know, it was just that daggone Peter Tingle.
Everybody hear that long pause? That means that Will was not prepared me for to instantly segue into that topic.
No, I wasn't. See, this is what happens when we go on break. You just jump right on in, and I was like, oh, I thought we were going to talk Stranger Things, but you pulled a Roxy on me here.
I saw an opening, and I took it, because I don't know how to jump into Stranger Things 3. Like, a lot of people die.
Lots of people
a
die.
A lot. Yeah. And not, like... nicely.
No. Yeah, the Mind Flayer and a lot of gore. Yeah, they upped the gore factor for sure this season.
Yeah, well, I guess we can start there then, since we're already talking about it. I did the binge in one day.
Wow.
How many days did it take you?
Let's see. I think I started it on July 4th night, and then I did about two episodes a day, so... I finished Sunday.
It's really funny the conditioning I've experienced with Netflix, because I'm on episode 6 and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, how much more is there? Because you get to that point in a TV binge where you're just like, okay, all right, what's going on here? Let's speed it along now. And I'm thinking to myself as if there's like 12 or 13 episodes. And then I look and I'm like, oh, there's only 8.
Yeah, I was happy when I saw that 8. I was like, I can do this. But it was so funny. Whenever I checked in with you over the holiday, and I was like, so, you know, have you started? And you told me you hadn't, and I was just like, oh shit, I've like actually done something before Belmont. This is like history here in our show.
I literally just stopped watching everything except for Euphoria on HBO, which it's the most bizarre show, and I'm strangely addicted to it because it really just embeds itself into your mind after you watch it, and you're like, it's not disturbing, but it's also not like Disney. it's very bizarre, that whole thing. But back to Stranger Things, it's just it was an easy binge. I did notice that they last season or season 2 they did 9 episodes, and this season they did 8, probably because everybody was really mad about one of the extra episodes because it made no sense and it was totally unnecessary. Overall, this is a good season.
Yeah.
I think I actually do like it more than season 2. I don't know if I like it more than season 1. And I was thinking about it right before we got on the air about how I feel like we keep watching the same thing, though.
Yeah.
Because it's always about trying to close the upside down, trying to keep things from getting out and everything. And even with that tease at the end, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, how is that a good tease? Because it's just another monster that clearly escaped the upside down. Right. And now they have to put it back. And who knows what that'll be. Like, I really liked the last episode all the way up until that moment.
I did too. Yeah. I did not like the ending with the Demogorg because the way they ended it with Jim's alleged death, but the letter, I was like, you know, I had shades of Avengers Endgame. I mean, it was where I didn't realize how much of an emotional connection I had developed with these characters until that moment.
Yes, I agree.
And then whenever L was reading that letter, and Hopper's voice over it got me. I freely admit I was sitting there like, okay, I'm not crying, you're crying, but it got me. And so I really wish they had just ended it there, because that was the perfect ending. They could have, you know, with the buyers leaving Hawkins, everything. I thought that would have been a nice bow tie to the series.
So okay, time out. I just realized something. A few weeks ago, I finally got caught up on Handmaid's Season 3, A Handmaid's Tale. I don't know why I called it A Handmaid's. Oh, God, this is another square peg into her.
Oh, it's okay. God.
Yeah, I was finally getting caught up on The Handmaid's Tale Season 3, and I reached episode, I think, 5, and there's a moment right at the end of the episode between two characters the Elizabeth Moss's real husband, who now is in Canada and they've been separated ever since Gilead. And she is explaining to him the birth of her new daughter and what happened via letter, Will. That's the important part that's the detail. Mm-hmm. I almost cried. Like, literally. Oh. Tears almost, and it wasn't a sad moment. It was actually, it was weird. It was like this most beautiful, bittersweet thing I've ever watched. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many emotions into that. Same thing here. Yeah. I don't know what it was about that letter. Like, it was interesting because it totally did go from this is really Hopper being Hooper being an idiot, being the mm-hmm. overbearing father. And then he really explains to you why we do love this show so much.
Yep.
Because it isn't about the stranger beasts or creatures or anything. It's just like this reminder of childhood and yeah. what it is like to grow up. And that moment with Will, where he gets in an argument with his friends, uh-huh. and it's kind of like, what, did you think we would do this forever? Because right. we have all experienced that ourselves. Like, this yeah. is my life. This is who I am. This is mm-hmm. what I know. Oh, wait, everybody else is moving on. I'm not ready to move yeah. on. And it just fit perfectly, because it's also like the adults in this show are just as resistant to move on as the children are.
They
are. It's really interesting.
Yeah, which was very interesting. We finally do see some moving on with Mrs. Byers, and it was, but it was still very gradual, and it was really her pairing with Jim and Alexi, and then later Murray that caused that growth,
mm-hmm.
that long. You know, when they were trying to work their way back from, back to Indiana. And, so those are those universal themes. And I guess that's one of the reasons why this show just works so well. Not only from the nostalgia, but I think you really hit it on the head, which is we've all been through this and we can identify with those kids so well, because at some point or another, we were those kids, maybe belting out Never Ending Story like that, or
nobody was that kid. Nobody was that kid.
Well, maybe not. Maybe there might have been somebody on this podcast that was, but anywho, that was. But the point where, like you said, with Will, basically, like, you know, beating down the shelter and where they had all their games and stuff. I mean, that was a very sad moment, but, you know, we all remember those moments when our friends, like, started hanging out with other people or, you know, oh, you got a girlfriend or you got a boyfriend. I mean, I never see you anymore. What's up? I mean, those are all those universal things that we all get. And that's, again, one of the geniuses of the show. And I think why it has, lasted so long and why people, you know, just really fall for it. I mean, I was just looking at a tweet before from Netflix right before we got on, and they said that so far 40 million people have tuned in and 18 million have already, like, finished it. So I think mm-hmm. it's like they're probably their highest rated show to date. Mm-hmm. And, so people still love this show. And, you know, you see some of the obvious blowback sometimes with people just trying to be contrary about the product placement and da 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 da. But, you know, I mean, that just adds to the authenticity of the period. It is a period show too.
Yeah, it absolutely is. My one criticism of it was the first few episodes, like especially the first 2.5. I felt like anytime a new character or anytime they needed to go from one scene to another scene, I have an idea. Let's play a song from the 80s.
Yeah.
I have an idea. And it just kept going. And I was like, what the heck? Is this Suicide Squad? Because I heard they did that in Suicide Squad. I was by the point where they ended up playing Madonna, I'm like, really? Another one? When will this end? There was something about it where the Stranger Things score is all you really need to transport yourself back there, that I just wish that there had been somebody who's like, maybe less is more, you know? We don't really need to use every single famous 80s song there's ever been, because there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
But we don't need to cram it down people's throats. A lot of what they were doing made sense and really brought back the nostalgia of, like, going to a mall the first time, mm-hmm. hanging out with friends and just that. But that's like my only minor criticism, because the fact that we saw so many different narrative threads. And I love how everybody was like kept on their own thread. It wasn't about crisscrossing or overlapping. It was about, no. Dustin is clearly going to be hanging out with Steve all through season 3. Done.
Yep. Done.
Like we got to figure out a way to separate him, which easy. I love that they brought in, I can't remember his name, but his little sister, Erica.
Erica
from America.
Yeah.
I love that joke. She and Dustin were like, I didn't know that I wanted that pairing, and then I got it, Will.
Yeah.
And I don't think I think Sophie Bear does not hold a candle to Erica from America.
Yeah, that was a great pairing. I was with you there. At first, I was like, she's so annoying. We're going to have a lot of her this season. And then it just grew on me. And yeah, it was a perfect pairing, especially sort of a younger foil to Steve
Dustin. She just was like the moment where he did the My Little Pony theory.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, she's a nerd. It's just nice because these writers clearly know that they want more characters. It's not just solely about these four boys who always did Dungeons and Dragons in their basements or anything. It's a bigger world. It's a bigger town than that. And I like it. And there's something very, because in the 80s, especially in the later 80s, there seemed to be these TV shows that had a lot of, were always based on families, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
And yeah, sometimes they would have their best friends over and they would be part of the cast and everything, but they would never be related. And it was created all of this nostalgia. So I think they're really doing that in like, remember when you watched all of those family comedy drama shows? And I'm like, yeah, I do. Yeah. Even though I'm from the 90s, I do remember.
But yeah, I mean, you couldn't escape it. I mean, afternoon TV, Family Matters, Full House, mm-hmm. Growing Pains, mm-hmm. all those things are just obviously the Duffer Brothers are, you know, products of that time period. And it shows in the way this series is constructed.
Yeah, Steve Harrington continues to be my favorite character on this show.
Yeah, I really like Steve as well. Steve and Robin, every time they were on the screen, I could just enjoy a spinoff show of just their adventures.
I don't know at what point, but I do know an episode or two before the reveal about Robin, I thought to myself, I wonder if she's gay. I don't know why, because they actually did a really good job of misleading you.
Yeah, they did.
Until the reveal. But there was something at one point that made me think that, and it doesn't mean that it takes away anything from that moment, because hats off to Maya Hawke, but when she hears him explain his feelings to her, and she has that moment of like, when she hears that, she just, like, it's just the camera's held on her and she goes through all of these different emotions. And I'm like, that's pretty hard to do for somebody who's so new to the screen, even though her mom's Uma Thurman. Like, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, she's got her genetic makeup. I mean, she cut into that household. Yeah. She's going to have the chops, but that was a very poignant moment, where Steve did Steve being obviously the dingus, douchebag, whatever you want to call him, but he has that redemption arc where he has gone from what we saw in season one, where he was just doing, you know, all the things as far as how badly he treated Nancy and John Byers and all that, to this point now. And especially, you could sort of see the path that Steve was going on, where he would end up like Hopper, like mm-hmm. Chief, if things hadn't broken the way that they had.
Right.
So, I mean, he's become the lovable doofus. And that's why Robin takes up for him and why I think he is my favorite character, even though whenever we first were introduced to him, he was very unlikable.
Yeah, it's just interesting to me that ever since season two, because season two, I really felt like he got that redemption he needed. Mm-hmm. And in this season, it just, there was something, he's the character who I feel like a lot of us older people relate to, because he's not an adult. Mm-hmm. Yet he's older than the little kids. He's also not related to any of the little kids.
Right.
And so the fact that they pointed that out, how creepy it is.
Yeah.
Over and over again. Yeah. Yeah. If you really think about it, it's pretty creepy.
It is.
But there's something about it where I feel like he found a purpose in season two, mm-hmm. that even though he probably couldn't have gotten into college there, it's like the thing that keeps him grounded and still in that town, or he's needed, like, yeah. Somebody, Dustin needs him. And I think initially he was threatened by Robin, and now, and then that came full circle. But yeah. Another thing I liked about it, I really liked Max. Max's mm-hmm. season had a wonderful little arc. I think that she should get a little bit more screen time. And it's interesting, if you notice, at no point have I said that 11 was my favorite part of the season. Because they have overused that character so much.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, when Max's stepbrother dies right before her eyes, who do they keep flashing the camera to? Not Max. Millie Bobby Brown.
Yep. Yeah.
Just like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad narratively they took her powers away mm-hmm. because her character was getting repetitive. The one thing I did like about how they treated her this season was pairing her off with Max. Mm-hmm. That did allow for some growth and new things. You know, obviously we had our typical teenage angsty romance issues that come up. And so of course they had, you know, she and Mike break up, but at the same time, it gave her a new opportunity to really, you know, spend time with Max, flesh out the character in a different way. And really they did a better job with the female characters this season, I thought, than they have in the past.
Yeah, I definitely liked her more this season than last season, and for exactly what you just brought up, like that female dynamic, especially in contrast to the boys mm-hmm. who were going through similar growing pains, but they were like mirroring one another, and mm-hmm. and I thought that was really cool. Something that was odd about it is that how little interaction did Mike and Will have with their older siblings, and meanwhile Max and her brother kind of went at it bits by bits. I don't know, there's just something weird about that to me, that the siblings aren't getting a lot of screen time together anymore.
Yeah, but I think to your earlier point, how everyone had their threads and they basically kept them sort of on that path, like, for, you know, John and Nancy had her story line with the sexist pigs at the newspaper, and her becoming more empowered because through the season, dealing with those issues. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting from looking at it now from a 2019 perspective on a show that's based in 1985. And so, you know, you see some of those sensibilities written, you know, showing how moronic and how misogyny was so pervasive then as it is now. And basically the show did use this as a good opportunity to sort of put the mirror on society in that arc with Nancy.
Yeah. I like how it felt like everybody, as much as they were split up into their little groups, they all were going to meet, cross paths eventually, because we all knew what everybody else was learning and we all were putting together pieces, but it was interesting how everybody went about it in a very different way. Mm-hmm. Like Hooper went at it very police, yeah. Very like bull in a china shop.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Nancy with her investigation skills and her persistence and her need to prove herself really pushed her to like making sure that this was real because she needed validation. And then the kids even at one point were separated, where Max and 11 were learning some information and Mike and his crew were just crying on the couch like yep. a couple of boys.
Yep.
Crying about girls, of yep. course. What else would a boy do? So it was very cool because we're used to talking about shows that have a lot of A, B, and C plots. And yet the B and C's never really have that pivotal moment of connection to the A plot.
Right.
Or it's just another thread, you know, we'll finish that thread off later. But I felt like there was a lot of momentum and it didn't bore me. No. Because everybody had such a different perspective on what they were trying to find, what they wanted to find, what they were doing. And then the next thing I know, four characters get trapped in an elevator and I'm like, wait, what's happening?
Yeah.
How is this going to relate? Okay. Didn't see that one coming.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, really was, I think, again, the strong thing about this season. I felt that was kind of lacking in season two whereas I felt when I watched season two of the show, it was really a chore sometimes to get through a few episodes. This season just went by like fast. I mean, I know I didn't do it like in a one day setting, but even when watching it over, breaking up over a span of a few days, it was a very efficient way of storytelling, and it just went by really fast. And you know, and then of course, you know, since the Duffers are brothers are from here in Durham, obviously whenever I hear some things like Jordan Lake, I mean, that's, you know, that's a little Easter egg for us, you know, here locally. I'm like, oh yeah, I know that place. Like, you know, those little things too are like little nice little nuggets too when I watch the show that I like hearing as well.
Oh, you're such a geography nerd.
Well, you know, it's geography nerd, but that, you know, I guess a homer. Being a homer here now. Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about before we move on?
You know, obviously there's a lot of theories out there about what happened to the chief, and well, I mean, we could spend time doing that, but you know, that's I said earlier how I wish the show had ended, but I mean, I know David Harbour has kind of like put the chance that he might be back. I mean, in some of the interviews where he's saying, I know the arc, and they're talking about going to seasons 4 and 5. So we'll see. I mean, I think the clubhouse leader now, as far as theories is that's Dr. Brenner. That's the American that is referenced there at the end. But obviously, there could be some way that the chief is brought back to.
Yeah, I think that like initially I was like, oh, he did, and then. When you're like, oh, or is he? I was thinking in my head, you're like, yeah, you can. I mean, we're dealing with Stranger Things, science fiction.
Right.
There's always a possibility. I hope, honestly, if you're going to bring him back, don't bring him back in season 4.
Right.
Don't do it. It's too soon. Don't do it. Also, more interesting, I'm wondering if there will be a time leap. I feel like there needs to be. I'm getting... But I'm also afraid that they're not going to do it, or they're going to wait until season 5 maybe to do it. But it's just what happens with the moving and the closure that everybody gets. I feel like to really sell everybody being back in that time and place, it's not about Mike and Elle going on, like still being in a relationship. It should be more about like returning home after you leave it and people changing in that way after different experiences. But we'll see. I mean, yeah. Season 3 snuck up on me for sure with Stranger Things. I knew it was coming. And then I was like, whoa, a quick turnaround. Maybe it'll be here before we know it and we'll get some more answers.
Yeah, we'll get some answers. I agree with you, though. If they do bring him back, completely agree it should be season 5. I mean, because it would just completely undermine the emotional moment and that they did so well with the end of this season. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, that's it for Stranger Things season 3. Now let's talk Spider-Man.
Yeah. One teenage drama to another one.
Literally. And Sorry. Like, part of me really thinks the best 3 to 5 minutes of this movie is really the whole in memoriam video they play at the very beginning.
Yeah, that was great.
I'm in a theater. Hardly anybody else is in there. It's just me and my mom and a few other people. And that comes on. My mom has no idea what's going on. And I'm sitting there just laughing my head off because I'm like, oh, they're this, that's right. Marvel does not play with telling you that this is a kid story, a kid with technology and just like the stupid things we do as teenagers. Oh man, I love that. I love that so much. It was really weird though. One thing that I did notice and I didn't really understand why is if this video was created by someone who wasn't a part of the Avengers, why did they reference Cap?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just
Yeah.
that as
I
soon
hadn't
as they
really.
flipped, because I love that it was Tony, that made
Yeah.
complete sense to me.
Right.
Like everybody knows what happened to Tony Stark.
Right.
Only a select few of us know what happened to Captain Rogers.
Or maybe it, or well, or maybe it did become public at that.
But what are you going to say, Will? I mean, part of what happened to Captain Rogers is he went back
Yeah.
and never came back, so he technically never left. And so I don't like, well.
I hadn't really thought about until you asked the question about that snippet, and I'm at a loss for answers. Of course, once we're done here, I'll we'll figure it out. But
Stay tuned next week
yeah,
to
exactly.
realize how far the rabbit down the rabbit hole Will went in
Yeah.
searching to figure out an answer to my question.
Hey, yeah, we'll see. Yeah, but did like that vid. It was a great moment. It was sort of like it was true MCU opening. I mean, as far as just like sort of sort of setting the tone, like we talked about with Endgame.
Right. What are they going to do with the next movie? Because I also thought that one of the best moments of Homecoming was the Peter's live stream of what happened at the airport during Civil War, which opens the movie filmed by Peter Parker. And then you have this opening and I'm just like, what are they going to do next? Like, come on. There's got to be something. I want to see the theories on Reddit right now because there's a trend here. And so I can only imagine what they think of because these are some classic moments of just like, let's set the tone in the best way possible.
Oh, so it's got to either be Flash's, like Flash Thompson's, either his videos of like what happened in London, or Ned, or something involving Ned.
Ned had a good part. Like he had a good some good moments. He got a love story. He had a love story occur. Fell in love on an airplane. Comes back to America, single again, but wiser and all for the better.
Totally. Yeah, it's thinking about our what we were just talking about earlier with our Stranger Things conversation and the summer love, I guess, where you always hear like on band trips or whatever, a couple folks get together, they hook up, and then they break up. But yeah, that was a great arc for him. He wasn't just a guy in a chair, but it was also funny how I like the way they set it up because. Ned was like all playing cool. It's like, no, we're gonna be single guys in Europe and all that kind of stuff. And then of course, they had the epic fail of trying to get the seats changed in the airplane before departing New York. And then of course, we get to they get to Venice, and they're a couple.
Yeah, he was a good foil for Peter because he got to live the go through the vacation as a kid. on zero expectations. He thought he knew what was going to happen, and then life changes and he just goes with the flow. And everything that Peter wants to be able to do that he can't, I feel like that's what we see through Ned and what he's going through.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, and but really, the person who had the most fun, I truly believe, was Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
Even though they underutilized him, he clearly, as soon as the twist happens, which we all know what the twist was, because it got broadcasted, and immediately people thought about it as soon as the trailers first started dropping.
Yep.
And that's the one thing about this movie, or not the one thing. I actually have probably a lot of criticism about this movie because I don't think it's perfect. I think that there's a lot of missed opportunities. But when you go into this movie and you already know the elementals are fake, you don't know how, you just know they are. The first half of this movie is boring.
No, well, see, I'm going to take a little exception with that because I actually enjoyed. At first, my hot take was I still thought I liked Homecoming better, but the more I like thought about it and really looked at what the true purpose of, I mean, we all, like you said, we all knew what was going to happen with Mysterio, that he was, just playing a part. But again, this, it to me was, it was a story about Peter dealing with Tony's death. The stage has been set for this from Endgame, also Spider-Verse, the whole concept of the multiverse. Because, you know, this version of Peter Parker does not have the well-worn, overused Ben Parker death, Uncle Ben's death. Tony basically becomes Ben Parker for Peter, as far as teaching the lesson with great power goes great responsibility. And so all that setup, even though it may seem boring and we knew what was coming, it was necessary to get that back in to teach Peter that lesson. And instead of it being the same old story of Uncle Ben getting shot while, cause Peter failed to stop the robber, this time it's the fact that Tony Stark died, and you know he gave Peter Edith to basically teach that same lesson. And so to me, that's why I like this film better than Homecoming.
I felt like Homecoming had a lot of the Tony Stark subbing in for Uncle Ben. And why it was so cool to watch Far From Home is because everybody who's going to go see Far From Home has probably like 99% seen the Avengers Endgame. And there's so much momentum that, oh, give me something. I'll take anything. I'll just consume anything.
Mm-hmm.
That you're just like blown away by all of the tie-ins, all of the references. There was a Cap reference that even Happy made.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Not the throw. The reference. Not the throw.
No.
Not the throw.
Definitely not the throw.
Also, dude, think about what Cap's shield is made of. Like, seriously, Happy. Seriously. This is why Aunt May does not want to date you.
Yeah.
Seriously. So I felt like it took too long of a 2-hour or more than 2-hour movie to get to that point where like this is really the story. And something, one note I put on this rundown is this a copy and paste repeat of Homecoming? Because I was thinking about it. I was like, wait a second. So we're technically comparing and contrasting the same twist with a little bit of different nuance around the context of the twist.
Yeah.
Because in the Homecoming, Michael Keaton's character, you knew he was a villain the whole time. Mm-hmm. You also understood, like, you were figuring out why he was doing what he was doing, what was motivating him. The twist was not that he was a supervillain, the villain, but that he was the dad of the girl that Peter's trying to go out with.
Right.
Like, that is a very fascinating twist that I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. Figuring out that a hero is posing as a trying to create this persona when in reality he is anything but a hero. Like, he's a hero in his, I feel like we've seen a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I just don't feel like they wasted too much time selling me that he is a good guy, even though everything I know about that character is like, no, he's bad. This is all fake. Yeah. Like you didn't have to do that. You had to do that for Peter. And so to me, I felt like, did you? Because Peter's pretty gullible.
Yeah. Pretty gullible. Only pretty gullible.
Literally, inadvertently starts almost destroys another kid's life on a bus. Okay? Like, literally almost kills a person. He finds himself in a very compromising position with a female. He's not the smartest man in the room. Okay?
He's not. But I mean, I guess that's why I was just saying that I think this was structurally, I agree with you that it structurally with, like, as you said, with a few points here and there, it's very similar to Homecoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The structure of it, even the whole Peter, Iron Man male bonding. Mm-hmm.
But I guess again, for me, going back to my point of just, I like the fresh take of showing, teaching Peter the lesson of with great power comes great responsibility. And they didn't have to, and thank God they didn't say it, but it's basically there. And that's basically the undercurrent throughout the movie.
Well, isn't that the undercurrent throughout any Spider-Man movie, though?
Well, it is, but I mean, my point is, it's a different take on it by basically structuring it around different characters instead of doing it in the same familiar pattern that we've seen for however many live-action films now.
Yeah. And I mean, so the other thing that bothered me was the sequence that would never end. And I'm talking about the first illusion, like legitimate illusion sequence with Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'm sorry, this may be my own personal preference, but the coolest part of those sequences was when it wasn't CGI.
Oh yeah, practical effects always went out.
Like, every time, the coolest, the most.
I actually thought of you whenever that sequence is going on. I was like, I can hear Sarah now complaining about the CGI.
It would not end. It kept going and going. And I'm like, oh my God. Because there's such a stark contrast between that and like what was just on previously on the screen that I'm thinking to myself, Peter, if you see what I see, don't you notice the difference here? Yeah. There's a sheen. but the best parts and the coolest uses of his powers was really when he was posing as other people. Mm-hmm. Like, as soon as you get that Nick Fury reveal, ironically, and a few others, and then at the end when it's he's dying, no, he's there, no, he's not. Like, those were really cool because that manipulation of not being able to trust even the people who you think you can trust, and which is obviously heading to a very secretive war. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Mic drop moment. it was so fascinating to me. And please don't get me wrong. I really do like what Jake Gyllenhaal did because the bar scene killed me. I love them hanging out.
Yeah.
And there were moments where I was like, oh man, I would want to be in that bar too. I would probably give him Edith too. But at the same time, I felt like it took too long to get there. I really do. One thing I think that they are really doing a good job with this whole MJ and Peter thing. Yeah. I mean, no, they do not have the same chemistry as Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield. But that was legitimate chemistry, guys. And I do think that there may be something going on with those two actors in Far From Home. But at the same time, they're going the much more awkward part. And I love how the battle ends. I like how he's able to save the day. And then his girlfriend comes over and they finally kiss. And it's like, no, Peter, you can have your cake and you can eat it too.
You can. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that's for the next movie. But yeah, I agree with you there. I was glad that they did the reveal. And I love how it first played out in Prague, where she just drops it on him. It's like, look, I know you're Spider-Man. And of course, you know, the circumstances, of course, forces him to, you know, finally admit it. But some folks may think that it was just too soon or whatever, but the way they couldn't carry her knowing and, you know, and all these little coy references and stuff, you know, after a while it would just get contrived. So I think it was good that they dropped it the way they did.
I think it's great. I mean, to go back to your point about, I like how there's undercurrents in this movie reminiscent of the story the mythos we love and adore, but a new take.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can still have the same dilemma with the secret identity if even when MJ knows. I mean, everybody thought it was a big deal after Homecoming. Aunt May knows. Minor details in this movie. Minor impact. Now, MJ's going to have a big impact in the next movie, but still, minor impact. So it's just... there's so much other quote-unquote secrets going on in this world that they're building that we don't need to fixate on that one, just because at one point in time, that's what really drew the viewers to watch this love story, is because she doesn't realize that he's a hero and she just wants a boyfriend. They can still have those arguments.
Yep,
even
sure
when
can.
She knows. They
yep.
can still have those arguments.
Yep.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And especially now with the twist at the end and how things have unfolded with him being publicly outed by Mysterio's team, then yeah, I mean, they can definitely have those moments.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting and I like it. I like that they left it there again. See, and this is probably why I didn't like the Stranger Things teaser, is because this, I had previously watched Far From Home and I'm like, they just did an amazing teaser. Like, it felt like they started the credits and you were like bracing yourself for a teaser in the next film, but what you really got was an extension. Like, you really
yep.
got the epilogue with
yep.
that moment.
You did.
And that's what all of those mid-credit scenes need to start being, because you know, for a while there, the mid-credit scenes were a bit lazy. I'm sorry, they just were.
Yeah.
It was just like a little nod. And it's like, nobody needs that. That's like B-roll footage. No,
yeah.
We want legitimate extension of the movie we just watched.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And then, of course, at the very, very end, which I did not stay for because I never stay for them.
Right. Come on. You're not that person. Come on.
There was a moment, I'm like, my mom's like getting up and I'm like, no, there's another one. And then I look at her and I look back at the screen and I'm like, let's get out of here. It's too long. No, I had a very busy day. Like we were doing a lot. I had already a lot of balls in there. So it was
well,
good.
Yeah. Well, you always, you know, you always find them on YouTube. So you're like, I'll catch you later.
I did, and I figured it out. So yeah. we learn in the very, very end that the whole time, Mr. Fury and Maria, right?
Yep, Maria Hill, yep.
Maria Hill were being played by some other characters we know from another recent Marvel movie, Captain Marvel. Yep. Thalos, and what is his wife's name?
Oh, I can't remember her name now, but okay. but the Scree, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So,
they're
not. They're the Skrulls.
The Skrulls, yeah, Skrulls, right. I was like, I combined.
Captain Marvel?
I combined the two. I called them the Scree, meaning the Skrulls.
So apparently, the next Avengers movie will be called The Revenge of the Scree.
Yeah, exactly.
But more importantly. They are clearly Nick Fury is using the Skrulls as I can't get the Scree out of my mind now. It's never gonna go away. As doubles. So we don't know at what point did he swap out? Did we ever see Fury in this movie, or was it always a decoy? Did these doubles come from Sony?
They came from Sony, and he there were decoys the whole way because Fury's like the most paranoid man ever.
And how meta is that though?
Yeah,
it was. Like we're gonna give you Nick Fury in a movie. Oh wait, no, we're not. He's really a Skrull the whole time.
Yeah, that's what made it work. So made it yeah that reveal at the end, like oh shit, they did that. Yeah. He would have figured out Mysterio in like an instant.
Mm-hmm.
And
maybe.
Well, a lot sooner than what happened. He wouldn't have. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the movie would have been done in like the first 30 minutes because you know Nick Fury would have figured it out because I mean, his secrets have secrets. So.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's because I watched Captain Marvel in the airport on my way. To my break, but I just keep remembering, and I need to remind you, Will, remember, Thalos said that it takes skill and talent, dare he say, to really impersonate someone.
Yeah.
So he was putting a lot of energy into something else. But they also zoom out and they show that there's more Skrulls, mm-hmm. and looking like some Independence Day action is about to take place.
Definitely.
Dare I say, who knows when? It's still though, because of everything that Captain Marvel, and this is my whole point. I'm still standing by this. I know that Captain Marvel is not the most loved movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but I'm still sticking to my comparison that it reminded me a lot of what Winter Soldier did. Because we still don't know if the Skrulls are good or if they're bad. I mean, some of them still may be good, and then some of them may be like, screw this, I want to be on Earth, and I'm going to wipe out all of these people.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair point.
We don't know.
It's a very fair point.
And some of us think that they're not Skrulls, that they're Scree. So clearly, the movie sent some very confusing messages.
Walked into that one.
Oh man. Anything else we missed?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we've really covered pretty much most of the major points. I mean, of the film. But again, it reinforces the fact that Tony Stark is the godfather of the MCU.
Yeah. Yeah. So does that make Peter Parker his great grandson or his grandson from Craptown?
We shall see.
I still can't get over that. I'm still confused. I'm still waiting for my.
I'll get y'all see a diagram of like the lineage of, Sego.
I need the tree. I need the full tree, all leaves included.
Family tree. I will send you a chart.
Just saying, this is what the people need. Last but not least, just minor note: Mulan trailer dropped earlier today. I like this trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, dare I say it, but stupid Disney, I see what you're doing here. You're doing the same shots in your movies, and it's not cool. However, this movie did it better, but I hope people know what I'm referencing, but there's a clear shot in this trailer that mirrors a shot in episode 9.
Oh, yes, you're right.
It is so, as soon as I watched it, I was like, what? Why would you copy? Like, granted, Mulan did it better because there's some realism in the way they shot that. And I almost feel like JJ made a mistake with how slow he did it in his version, because they really slowed down the entire thing. And with her, she's spinning over, but the action is still playing out beneath her.
Yep.
So it didn't feel like completely slowed down. It just was like with her and her movements. And hats off to that actress. She barely has any lines. She can fight.
Totally fight, yeah.
Oh, my God. The choreography, where has that been? Where has that been?
Oh, I mean, it was an epic trailer. This was one of those situations where I'm like, okay, I actually will go see this live-action Disney film because I understand it's definitely – it's. Be clear, everyone, it's not a musical, and there's no dragon. There's no Eddie Murphy. There's no Mushu. So if you're expecting just a live action version of the 1998 Mulan, no. I think this story is really sort of sticking closer to the actual Chinese legend. And it was just, like you said, it was just a phenomenally shot trailer, showing some of the best, probably some of the best scenes as far as from the film we've seen some of these things too where things don't, they may be in a trailer but not end up in the final cut, but it definitely colored me intrigued. I think I'll definitely go check this out.
Okay, so I was excited and then you told me that it's not a musical. So you're telling me I'm not going to hear the classic song. I forget what it's called now, but it's been in my head, like, let's get down to business to defeat the Huns. Remember to hear that song?
From everything I've read so far, it has a score, but it's not a musical.
Everybody know, all I had to do was sing the first lyric, and he knew exactly what I'm talking about, but he can't remember the title either.
I can't, but everything it's not going to be a musical. It's live action, but we're not going to have, at least that's what I've read so far.
I hope they just slam poetry it up. I hope they just are just like casually one of the characters is like, let's get down to business. And then you hear somebody shout behind them to defeat the Huns. It's like, well, no, these actors, they're really good at acting, but they're not the best singers, so we're just going to slam poetry it up. You know, it's just the lyrics, like those two lyrics, I need somebody to say it at one point in the movie. Like two people, and it's like an echo, and you just start, and you let the other person finish. I'm just saying, if I was a scriptwriter, I would
skateboardery it up. Yeah. I'm sure you'll get something like that. Just for you. They'll recut it just for you.
All right. And on that note, Will, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me at Will M. Polk. That's WILLMPOLK. And I'll be hanging out with the screen.
And you can find me at SJ Belmont, SJBELMONT. Please follow our crew on Twitter at Scene and Nerd. Friend us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. But most importantly, rate, subscribe, and comment on iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, and Spotify. Good night, geek out. You're welcome.